JSE listed Bidvest, which operates across several sectors in the local economy and other international markets, including pharmaceutical, industrial products, financial services and freight management, among others, released their half-year results today. For the 6 months ended December 2020, the company reported achieving a trading profit from continuing operations of 4.1 billion rand. That's up 3.5% on the year prior. Headline earnings per share came in at 601.7 cents. That's up 6.3% on the year before. Shareholders are set to get an interim dividend of 290 cents a share. To take us through the results, I'm joined on the line by Mpumi Madisa, the not-so-new CEO at Bidvest. Thanks very much for joining us, Mpumi. Now, are you fairly comfortable with the results that you've delivered to the market today, especially given the challenges posed by the pandemic?
First of all, thank you for the opportunity. Sure. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think when I started my introduction, I said we're really proud. You know, we're proud to deliver this set of results. And keeping in mind that we're also up on a non-COVID prior 2019. Mm. And I think for us to be up on the revenue line, trading profit line, headline earnings and strong cash generation is really, really a fantastic result.
Now, in your report, you state that at some point about 75% of your staff were not able to work because of COVID-19 restrictions. What sectors in particular were you affected by and how quickly were you able to get back to some sort of semblance of normality?
Yeah, I mean, the factors really were beyond our control, right? So lockdown level 5 had its own criteria around which businesses and services were essential and non-essential. And really just the way that it landed from the regulations was that 75% of our businesses weren't essential. And therefore, we ended up with 75,000 of our people not working at that time during that hard lockdown. Well, look, we spent a lot of time keeping very close to government through our various industry organizations, understanding what we needed to motivate for the various sectors for an early opening up, putting in place our protocols from a health and safety perspective. Because it's one thing to say we think our sector must open up, but what's more important is to be able to demonstrate that the sector is ready to open up in a safe manner.
Yes. You know,
and so there was a lot of work that went into that. And so when we started engaging, our first engagement was with government. Let's walk you through what we've done in terms of implementing health and safety protocols across our businesses. Hmm. And I mean, it was interesting. It's one thing to kind of have to close down your business in a couple of days. What is actually more complex is opening it up, particularly in our space where we've got factories and warehouses, etc. You know, it's not a switch on, switch off of a machine. It's a far more kind of complex process. You know, so we also had to make sure that, you know, we have sufficient lead time to be able to phase up, particularly in our factory operating environments. And as I said in the presentation, we're really, really ecstatic that today I can say 95% of our people are back at work, you know, and not just back at work, but we're back in the offices. We're socially distanced. We've got our health protocols in place. We understand this new way of working, but we're back in the office.
Mm, excellent. I didn't realize that you employ so many people, but you talked about 75,000 people not being able to work. That's quite a lot. So in terms of, you know, compensation and all of that, how did that work out? Did you have to, you know, offer pay cuts or were they able to get support from the government and so on?
So it was a combination. Obviously, government support and across all our three main territories, South Africa, UK and Ireland, was really welcome. UIF TERS safety net given in South Africa was really phenomenal, including the furlough schemes in the UK and Ireland. Mm. Topping that up, we also set up a COVID fund so that we could also supplement salaries. And between our COVID fund and the various employee support programs, we were in most instances able to ensure that our employees not working received up to 100% of their salaries.
Yeah.
We have spent to date 170 million, and we continue to support our employees, in particular in the travel, tourism, and related industries where working, you know, has really not come back to 100% yet.
Yeah. Mpumi, how worried are you about the sluggish growth in vehicle sales? I mean, that's an area that you have a presence in on the retail side.
Yeah, we are worried. I'll be very honest with you. So in the first half of the year, what was interesting for us to see, I mean, you know, I spoke about the numbers. So volumes are down year on year, both on the new and used side. But what we found in the first half of the year is our recovery from, call it April, May, was quite strong. Mm. And in certain instances, we're actually at pre-COVID, what we call pre-COVID volumes, which is kind of pre-April volumes, but still down year on year. What we're already seeing from January trading onwards is the credit crunch from a disposable income perspective. We can see it already. In December, we sold few cars. In January, we sold fewer cars as well. So disposable income is definitely coming under pressure. Mm. And then I think probably what may have happened in the first half of the year is that while there was a net contraction, there was a lot of liquidity, if I could call it that.
Yes.
We had UIF TERS paying out. Even if people were being retrenched, they were getting retrenchment packages. Mm. You had lots of employers supplementing where they could. So there probably was far more liquidity, net-net. Mm-hmm. Definitely from January, we can see that the consumer is under pressure.
Mm. Now, you have operations in the UK and Ireland, as you mentioned. How did those fare in the period? How did they affect the bottom line?
Yeah, they did well. So maybe if I start with Noonan. Noonan really performed. That's our facilities management business with a footprint in Ireland and the UK. Mm-hmm. The operations in Ireland did exceptionally well. Our operations in the UK were under pressure, mainly because of the lockdowns in the UK. I mean, the UK even now is kind of in their third lockdown. Mm. And that's really impacted kind of your hospitality sectors. And we've got quite a big concentration in terms of cleaning of cinemas and so on. So that part of the business was under pressure. But outside of that, the rest of the Noonan business performed well. PHS, we finalized that acquisition in May last year. We've got 6 months of their trading profit in our numbers. They really performed in line with expectations. Whilst there was a decline in some of the contractual revenue, and that's really because of the lockdown, some of their clients were non-operational. They did a sterling job in terms of one-off work. Mm. You know, so the kind of non-contractual, more one-off work compensated for the decline. And so we're very comfortable. PHS is performing exactly in line with expectations.
Very interesting that you talk about the cleaning of cinemas. That must be a huge contract. And you must be very worried about the future of cinema, you know, for your own kind of selfish purposes, because people have just steered clear. Your thoughts about the future
there. Yeah. And, you know, so what's interesting that's happened in that industry is that there's an unfortunate double whammy, right? So the first part is lockdown. And obviously, places where you've got crowds that would be able to come in, those are the ones that have been closed far longer than other industries. And I mean, cinemas falls in them. And then the second part of what's happened is that there's actually a content issue. So because of lockdown in various areas, films weren't being produced because just of the physical restrictions.
That's right.
So the second problem with cinemas is that there isn't sufficient content. And so what we've seen with some of our clients, in particular in the UK, they've actually closed on their own outside of COVID because they've just said, we have to wait for content. We just don't have sufficient content.
Yes.
And we can't take, you know what I mean?
Mm.
So, I mean, we are worried. We're staying very close to those clients. You know, the messaging that we're getting is that this is hopefully a temporary blip. Once the content comes back up, you know, some cinemas will be able to come on stream as they have previously. But yeah, I mean, that's really kind of a double sword, unfortunately, in
yes.
that industry.
Hmm.
But we're staying very close to our clients, and hopefully once they recover, we'll be able to pick up with them.
So you indicate that cost containment and keeping the balance sheet in check were of top priority, and you also report having brought down your debt levels. Just tell us a bit about that.
Sure. So from a cost perspective, costs were up 1.3%, but on a like-for-like basis, we're down 9.6%, which I think is really phenomenal. On the debt side, our debt levels did increase to 15.8 billion, and that's in the main because of PHS compared to a prior year of 6.9 billion. So whilst those debt levels are up, we're very comfortable, though, with where our debt ratios are. So our debt to EBITDA at the moment is at 1.7 times versus 2.1 times
yes.
At the end of June.
Mm.
We've done quite a significant amount of work in terms of paying down our PHS bridge. We had taken out a bridge facility of £516 million We've paid down 330 million of that as at December. And so I just left with 186 million pounds to pay off. So we're very comfortable with where we're at from a debt perspective.
So here at home, you're going to be involved in the distribution of the country's COVID-19 vaccination program. How's that going to work?
So we're not necessarily in a big way directly involved. Our involvement is really mainly through Business for South Africa in terms of assisting with just expertise around vaccine distribution, modeling, etc. That's the kind of support that we're providing. We're doing all of this, obviously, on a pro bono basis.
Okay.
This is not the time to be charging for these kinds of services when you're trying to look after people's lives.
Mm. So you've indicated having generated cash levels of 6.2 billion rand, and you do say that you're always on the lookout for growth opportunities. So are there any certain geographies or sectors that you're currently eyeing for the next big opportunity?
So at the moment, I spoke about Access Group, which Noonan finalized in February of this year.
Mm-hmm.
And that really expands Noonan's footprint, in particular from a security perspective, takes them to number one from a market share perspective in London and number four in the UK. We do have two other acquisitions in the pipeline. Can't disclose them at the moment.
Okay.
We're busy with due diligence processes. Mm-hmm. That we're looking at internationally. And in South Africa, there aren't really many targets locally from an SA perspective. We continue to look, but there isn't really anything material in the pipeline at the moment.
Mm. So you started the big job in October last year. How has it been? And I suppose it's a bit of a baptism of fire starting a role at such a big firm like Bidvest in the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah, you know, when COVID hit kind of early beginning of the year, I thought to myself, you must be joking. It's got to be happening. And you're right, a bit of a baptism of fire. But, you know, we've got such an amazing business with such amazing leadership across the group, you know. And when I came in October, really for me, the first thing was just to try and get as close to the people as possible. You know, because COVID has also been something that has been really emotionally draining,
yes.
You know, and mentally draining. And it was important for me to get a sense of the pulse from a staff morale perspective and be clear where that is and how we get the energy level back up, you know.
Mm.
You can't expect 100% from your employees if they're just not there mentally, physically, and in every way. So that was a very big focus. The issue around what we needed to do from a business perspective, that was clear from July onwards. We were clear that liquidity needed to be a focus. We were clear that cost containment needed to be a focus and cash generation needed to be good. So, you know, the teams had, I was very comfortable that that work was being done throughout our 200 plus businesses. But my focus really right in the beginning was around the people and getting a pulse on the ground. And focusing on getting the energy levels up.
Yeah, yeah.
And the leadership team that supported me has really done a phenomenal job in that space.
We're at alert level one now. That's good news, of course, for economic activity. What does that do to your mindset? Does that get you excited?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when the president spoke, I thought, wow, alert level one, you know? So it does. I mean, it opens up the economy more, at least gets an uplift, you know, compared to where they were. And hopefully we'll see that as well come through in terms of our own businesses that are directly exposed to those sectors. Having said that, we still need to be very careful, right? And I don't think that moving back to alert level one, and in fact, in my head, the economy is at alert level one, but at a personal level, we must as people remain at alert level three, if
yes.
that makes sense,
yes.
you know, just in terms of being careful and cautious. We're busy with the vaccine rollout. 70,000 frontline workers being vaccinated is great. And I'm hoping that government will be able to keep up that pace in terms of vaccinations, because the only way that we're going to de-risk the risk of a spread is possible. So there's still a really fine balancing act that is needed. But really, my view, economy at level one, people, we need to still be careful and almost treat ourselves still at level three.
That was Mpumi Madisa. She's the CEO at Bidvest.